या एतात् प्रयतो नरः सायं प्रातर गृणन् भक्त्या धूका ग्रामाद् विमुच्यते. Whoever carefully recites the mysterious appearances of the Lord with devotion in the morning and in the evening, he gets relief from all miseries of life. Support by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Personality of Godhead has declared that anyone who knows the principles of the transcendental birth and activities of the Lord will go back to Godhead after being relieved from this material tabernacle. So simply knowing factually the mysterious way of the Lord's incarnation in this material world can liberate one from material bondage. Therefore, the birth and activities of the Lord, as manifested by Him for the welfare of the people in general, are not ordinary. They are mysterious. And only by those who carefully try to go deep into the matter by spiritual devotion is the mystery discovered. Thus, one gets liberation from material bondage. It is advised, therefore, that one who simply recites this chapter of Bhagavatam, describing the appearance of the Lord in different incarnations, in sincerity and devotion, can have insight into the birth and activities of the Lord. The very word vimukti, or liberation, indicates that the Lord's birth and activities are all transcendental. Otherwise, simply by reciting them, one could not attain liberation. They are therefore mysterious. And those who do not follow the prescribed regulations of devotional service are not entitled to enter into the mysteries of his births and activities. Whoever carefully recites the mysterious appearances of the Lord with devotion in the morning and in the evening gets relief from all miseries of life. Killer chapter from Bhagavat Purana. Srila Veda Vyas is beautifully describing various of the principal incarnations of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. And he is describing here that one who carefully recites this particular subject matter of the appearances of the Lord with devotion on a regular basis, every morning and every evening, will get relief from all the miseries of life. This material existence has been created by the Lord for the particular purpose of giving impetus to the souls shackled in the prison of material life to take shelter of his lotus feet. We are all given independent will, and our life is determined by how we exercise that free will that has been so kindly given to us by the Lord. our eternal constitutional position is to offer with devotion our every act, our every word, our every thought to the Supreme Personality of Godhead for His pleasure. But in order for the intensity of love to be real and satisfying to the soul, Krishna also gives us the entitlement by which we can choose to deny Him on various levels. Krishna says in Gita, Ye yatha mam papadyante tham sthithaiva bhajamyaham mamavart manuvaratante manushya paratasaravasha. That as you surrender to me, I will reward you accordingly. Krishna also explains that everything is emanating from Him. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matta sarvam prabhatite. That all material and spiritual worlds are but His various energies. Varashya shaktir vivadai vashruvate. And Krishna has two primary energies, Yoga Maya and Mahamaya. Yoga Maya is that energy of the Lord being personally directed by Srimati Radharani and her spiritual expansions to bring our hearts closer to the love and devotion of the Lord. Yoga means to connect, to reunite. Maya means energy, that energy which serves to reunite our hearts in love and devotion to Krishna is called Yoga Maya. In Mahamaya means that great, all-powerful, all-devouring energy of this material world which distracts all of our attention away from Krishna. Mahamaya works through the three modes of material nature. And through these gunas, she attracts our mind and she attracts our senses to want to enjoy. When the soul comes under the subjugation of the mind and senses, the soul wants to enjoy independent of God. And Krishna has created the three miseries, Ariyatmaka, Aridaivaka, Aribhautaka, just to frustrate all of our attempts to enjoy separate from Him or to lord it over material nature. Durga means prison. This material world is classified as a prison. And what keeps us here? Only one thing, our desire to stay. Our desire to enjoy independent of Krishna is what keeps us birth after birth after birth in the frustration of experiencing the threefold miseries. Those miseries caused by one's own body and mind, miseries caused by other living beings, and miseries caused by higher natural powers. And it does not take much logic or argument to convince people these days that there are many sufferings and miseries in life. It is all around us. For this reason, Kali Yuga is a very good time to take shelter of the Lord. In Satya Yuga, although Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Punaravartan Ordinan, it's all miserable, it's all places of birth and death, there's a large degree of covering of those miseries. There's more of an illusion of enjoyment, what to speak of the heavenly planets. But in this earth planet, in Kali Yuga,
misery is blatantly manifested all around us. You have to really be duped in utter ignorance to think that you can enjoy in this world. But the amazing thing is most people are in that category. But we assume that those who come to this temple have understood the reality around them. Just see. We can make so many plans and arrangements, but ultimately the threefold miseries conquer us. What is the most progressively advanced economic country that's practically taking over the world? It is Japan. A major part of the United States of America is owned by Japanese businessmen. Some of the biggest, most famous hotels, biggest, most famous buildings. Last I heard, they were trying to buy the Empire State Building, Sears Tower, the largest building in Chicago, the main places in America they're trying to buy. Most of Hawaii, the state of Hawaii, is owned by the Japanese. So they lost the war and they suffered miserably. They thought they could conquer the world. They bombed the American Navy and destroyed every ship in the American Navy. Then America came back and dropped an atom bomb on Hiroshima and dropped all kinds of fire bombs on Tokyo and devastated the whole nation, and they suffered miserably. But under the illusion of Maya, they were convinced that we will come back, we will enjoy, we will take over the world. And they're doing it. One little island. But so much of the world is depending on them, on their knees for their technology and their various other goods. So many of the biggest companies and industries that made America so strong are completely out of business and shut down because the Japanese sell the same products for cheaper. So they're economically trying to conquer the world. Why? So that they could enjoy a higher position. And they're building their cities so wonderfully. But last week, there was earthquake in one of the principal cities. And none of their computer chips could rescue them. None of their economic strategic planning could convince the earthquake to go somewhere else. There was no diplomacy or negotiations involved. It struck, and I think it was about 40 seconds. Thousands dead, all their highways, bridges destroyed. That is called Adi Daivaka. That means the misery is caused by natural forces. And here in India, earthquakes. Los Angeles, California, the most advanced city in America. Recently, there was also a big earthquake, destroyed billions of dollars, and they're waiting for another one that's supposed to throw the whole city in the ocean. And so much disease and frustration and inability to get along with even our own family members, friends. This material world is full of miseries. We should just admit it. It's a miserable place. But we should make the best use of a bad bargain. And we should understand why these miseries are here. Krishna could have created a perfect place where we could be happy forever, in illusion, without any of the ecstasy of loving him.
But Krishna knows the soul cannot be satisfied with any amount of material luxury or convenience or happiness, because the soul is seeking the ras of loving devotion to the Supreme Lord. So out of his mercy and kindness, he has made this material world a place of misery by which we can have the impetus to surrender to God. Of course, it is our duty to try to ward off the miseries according to our capacity. But for what? Just to survive a few more years? Human life is meant for self-realization. Tapo divyam putrakayena satpam sudyedyasya brahmasokyam tvanantam. Human life is meant for something beyond the animals. It is meant to experience the ultimate joy of Krishna consciousness. And therefore, we try to, on the physical and mental level, create an atmosphere where there is good health, where there is as much unity and harmony as possible. And hopefully that environment will give one convenience by which they can dedicate their mind, their intelligence, in seeking the higher goal of life. We have not been created just to survive comfortably. We have been created with a goal, and every human being is obliged to seek this goal of life. And that goal is to realize the eternal soul, which is transcendental to this physical body, which is the source of all our miseries, the gross and subtle physical body. Krishna explains very beautifully in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita the nature of the soul. It's transcendental. Relationship with the Absolute Truth. And he declares that that is Rajavidya. It is the king of all knowledge. Why? Because it brings about real joy, real happiness. Anandamayo Vyashat. And that is what every living being is looking for. Spiritual, transcendental joy. And joy, in order to be satisfying to the spiritual part of Krishna within our hearts, must be not subjected to the three modes of material nature, not subjected to the threefold miseries of material nature. And practically all the attempts of science, technology, medicine, and everything is to somehow or other alleviate suffering. That's practically all men do and all women do in this world, is try to create a situation in their life to alleviate suffering. All the entertainment industry is just to keep people from suffering utter boredom. People are so dissatisfied with themselves and so bored with life that they have to just forget everything by watching the television, or by going to the cinemas, or by listening to various forms of music, or by going to various athletic events. It is all just to cure people from the frustration of boredom, for the time being. But how long does it last? It actually intensifies the frustration in our hearts due to further agitating the bewilderment of our mind and senses. Most of the things that we do is just to sigh to satisfy the frustration of boredom in our hearts. And then we work so hard to eat
so we don't suffer hunger. To get clothes, for we don't suffer embarrassment of looking poor. To get nice home, so we don't have to suffer humiliation amongst our society or caste members thinking, why you live like this? So much social pressure causes us so much misery, and we have to work so hard to counteract it. A place to sleep, a place to eat. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. The animals are also trying to ward off the misery by providing those things for themselves and their family members. But there's no solution. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati would say that there are so many problems that are causing so much anxiety, but really there's only one problem, and that is a lack of Krishna consciousness. Because the body has to suffer, no matter what you do. It's its nature. You cannot free the body from suffering any more than you can make water dry or the sun cold. Because it is the nature of the sun to be hot, it is the nature of water to be wet, and it is the nature of the body to suffer. And no one can deny it. But there can be some relief. There can be some sense of enjoyment. But it's all in the realm of suffering. And Krishna created it like this, as his way of calling us all back home, back to Godhead. Just like if your child is doing very, very nasty things and neglecting studies and creating a terrible future for himself, do you make him feel good about it? You want him to suffer a little, to teach him a lesson that he should do the right thing. So Krishna is our father, and how he has created this world. He is not the reason for our suffering. We are the reason for our suffering. He has just created the scenario by which we have to accept the fruits of our own activities. But how merciful is Krishna? It is explained here in the Srimad Bhagavatam how to get relief from all the miseries of life by carefully. Let us study this verse carefully. Whoever means anybody. No one specific. It doesn't matter what qualification or disqualification you have in this material world. Whoever. Whether you're Indian or Western, whether you're rich or poor, whether you're low caste or high caste by material standards, whether you're dark color or light color, whether you're man or woman, whoever, anyone who recites carefully. Carefully means with great attention, not just as a ritual. We have seen that some people have in their homes, they have Brahmins just reciting, and they just go on with their household duties and feel that everything's auspicious because somebody's reciting. But you have to be careful, carefully to speak it, carefully to hear it, and most of all, carefully to be conscious of what's being spoken and what's being heard. To be attentive. This is the process by which we must hear and chant. The mysterious appearances of the Lord. It is being explained that the Lord's appearances are very mysterious. No one can fathom them. No one can understand them unless the Lord Himself reveals within our heart the transcendental nature of His pastimes and His words. There are so many translations of Bhagavad Gita, but practically none of them can understand the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita. And there are so many people who narrate Srimad Bhagavatam, but their conclusion has nothing to do with Srimad Bhagavatam. We have seen. There are men who can sit and recite Bhagavatam for 7 or 8 days and keep people enthralled with the way that they tell the stories, even make people cry and laugh. But their conclusion has nothing to do with the Srimad Bhagavatam. There are many proper reciters too, we are not saying, but there are many who are not. The conclusion of the Bhagavatam is the same as the conclusion of the Gita, that Krishna is a person. He is the absolute truth. And unless we surrender to Him with devotion, we cannot understand what is the Bhagavatam and what is the Gita. Bhakto-shime-shaka-cheti-rahasyam-yetad-utamam. Krishna tells Arjuna that my message is a mystery, but because you are my devotee, you can understand it. You are fit to hear it. No one else but my devotee. And devotion is eternal. The soul is eternally part of Krishna. The soul is eternally meant to surrender to Krishna. These mysterious and wonderful explanations are only realized by the grace of God. And there's no other way. Not through any amount of academic study of the scripture is the mystery revealed, only by humble, submissive devotion. And it is described that one should recite in the morning and in the evening. That means every day. Nasta praesya bhadreshu nityam bhagavati sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtaki. It is not something that is just done when we have time. It is not something that is done according to our convenience. It is not something that is done once a week to superstitiously protect us from anything we may have done wrong during the week. This is the way most people follow religion these days. It must be done every morning and every evening. That means we must make it a priority in our life above everything else. The Srimad Bhagavatam is giving a very liberal concession, especially for grihasthas, who may say, how can I be a devotee if I have to work so hard to maintain my family? Yes, you must work hard to maintain your family. If you have family, it is your duty. Srila Prabhupada said, being a devotee doesn't mean you be a bum. You know what is bum? It means a lazy person who does not take any responsibility for his life or any of the situation around him. Krishna consciousness is not for lazy people. Krishna consciousness is for dynamic, responsible, exemplary people. If one is a grihastha, one must be exemplary in society. One must make provisions. As long as we're in this material world, we cannot neglect the needs of good health and physical maintenance. But that does not become our purpose of life. That is something we do to facilitate the purpose of life. But the purpose of life is to become free and help others become free from the miseries of material existence by surrendering to Krishna. By becoming purified through spiritual practices. And if we take that goal seriously, we must make it such a prominent priority that every morning and every evening we make Krishna first in our life by hearing and chanting his glories. That is essential. We begin our day and we end our day hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. And that society that practices this principle is called civilized. And however nicely we develop our economic conditions, if we do not live for that purpose, we are uncivilized. This is the conclusion of the scriptures. And Krishna has come in so many wonderful incarnations. Why? Just to give us more and more subject matter to hear and chant about. We have just sung the beautiful song of Sri Jayadev Goswami, which is the introduction to the Gita Govinda. Jayadev Goswami, in his Gita Govinda, he describes the very, very advanced, pleasing pastimes of Vrindavan. He explains that this particular poem is meant for liberated souls, not for ordinary beings. He explains himself that this poem is for those liberated souls who have awakened by the grace of the Lord within their hearts pure devotion to the rasas of the Lord in the spiritual world. For those who have perfected their sadhana, he has written Gita Govinda. And in the introduction, he's explaining, who is this Krishna that's playing so sweetly with Radharani in the kunja of Vrindavan? He is that same Krishna who assumed the form of a great fish, millions of miles long, named Matsyavatar. That Krishna who's dancing with the gopis in Braja, he's not an ordinary boy. He was the one who expanded himself as Kurma Avatar, a turtle millions of miles wide. He was the Lord who appeared as Varaha Dev, a boar who was so big and so powerful that he held the entire earth on the tusks, which are placed just above his nose. And then he killed the great demon Hiranyaksha. That sweet son of Jashoda, who steals butter and engages in so many naughty activities, by his mere expansion, he appeared as Lord Narasimhadev, that mighty half-man, half-lion, whose very roar shook the entire universe, and who killed the greatest, most powerful, envious demon, Hiranyakashipu. He appeared as Vamanadev. And with three steps, with two steps, although he appeared in a little form of a dwarf. Dwarf means like these little children that were dancing, that size. Trivikram. But with two steps, he covered all the planets in the universe. We are so proud if we can shoot a rocket ship that claims to touch the moon. And we spend so many millions and billions, billions of taxpayers' dollars, so much effort, so many dangers to cover some distance But the Lord, with two steps, he covered the whole universe in a matter of seconds.
Then that same Lord Sri Krishna, who's weeping and crying in separation of the gopis, and the gopis are weeping and crying in separation from him, who people think, what is this? Why is he dancing with these young girls? This is not the way we are taught to live. That same Krishna, he wants to show us what is his real position. That he appeared as Bhrigupati, Parasuram, and he destroyed single-handedly, without even another soldier to help him, all of the Kshatriyas 21 times. We here in India are building big army because we are afraid of China and Pakistan, and so many people we have to draft and recruit, maybe not draft, but recruit, and put so many pressures to keep them in the army. And we are begging on our hands and knees other nations to give us missiles and other resources. And this is a powerful, one of the greatest armies of the world. But the Lord, when he comes, he with one chopper, he destroyed all the armies in the world. 21 times consecutively. One chopper. He doesn't need Scud missiles. He doesn't need negotiators, diplomats to make proper battle plans. He doesn't need spies. One chopper, finished within seconds. That is Krishna. And he appeared as Lord Sri Ramchandra, with his mighty bow. One arrow, he shot them in South India through those trees. What, seven trees, huh? He shot them through all the trees, and then the arrow went all the way down to Patala Loka, and all the way up to the heavenly abodes, and then came back into his quiver. And he told Sugriva, "You see, you have nothing to fear. I am Ram, all powerful." And he appeared as Lord Balaram. Lord Balaramji, the entire Kuru dynasty, when they offended him, with his plow, with one push of the plow, the whole city of Hastinapur came out from the ground. He was ready to throw it in the river Ganges. And all the greatest warriors on earth came to surrender to him. And that same Lord Balaram, in one of his expansions as Anantashesha, is holding all the planets of the universe effortlessly on his hoods. And he appeared as Buddha in the form of Buddha avatar, that Krishna who's so much enjoying amorous pastimes with his devotees. He showed what is real renunciation. As Buddha, he was such a renunciate. He gave up his queens. He gave up everything. He was king. He was prince. He left all the luxuries of his palace. He sat under trees. He emaciated his body. He performed such tapasya this world has never seen. And then he preached self-control, meditation. And he drove out all rascals who were teaching animal slaughter in the name of religion. And that same Sri Krishna will appear also as Kalki avatar. And we see how terrible Kali Yuga is becoming. We see how people are becoming more and more demoniac, and the demoniac people are becoming more and more powerful. And what can we do? We're all helpless. We're all so small compared to the propaganda of this world that's taking place. But Kalki, with his horse and his sword,
He destroys all the classes of demon in the matter of minutes on this earth. So establish, who is this Krishna who's playing in the groves of with the gopis? He is not an ordinary person. He is the absolute truth. And whatever he does is perfect. Whatever he does is absolute. And then he begins to narrate that song which is meant for the most exalted liberated souls. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally would relish very much hearing the wonderful poems of Jayadev Goswami. It is described when he was living in Jagannath Puri, Ramananda Rai and Srila Swarup Damodar Goswami would regularly, each night, sometimes throughout the day, narrate the poems of Chandidas and Vidyapati, the Krishna Karnamrita by Bilva Mangala Thakur, and the Gita Govinda of Jayadev Goswami. All of these are very advanced literatures. It is described by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur that all of these great poets, they lived before Mahaprabhu. Jayadev Goswami lived approximately 400 years before Lord Chaitanya. But Bhaktivinoda explains that Lord Chaitanya, who is eternal, preparing for his own incarnation, he impregnated his own conception of love of God into the hearts of these great souls. And by his mercy they wrote. On this disappearance day of Jayadev Goswami, I'd like to narrate a few stories which illustrate the beauty of the love between the Lord and his devotees. Jayadev was born in Bengal, in a village, and he came to Navadvip. There's a place called Prithukund, just very close to the place where Lord Chaitanya, 400 years later, would appear. And when he saw the beauty of that place, he was so charmed that he told his wife, Padmavati, let us live here. So they began to live. And he was a Brahmin and a Grihastha, but he was very, very austere. He was very simple. He would just spend his days and nights along with his wife, just chanting the holy names of the Lord and worshiping the Lord and serving the devotees of the Lord. And especially he would write, due to inspiration, beautiful, beautiful poetry in glorification of the Lord. So he wrote one poem. It is described that the subject was Krishna's flute was speaking, describing the wonderful pastimes between Radha and Krishna. And as he was, that poem, somehow or other, it was circulated. And the king of Bengal, whose name was Lakshman Sen, somehow or other he heard that poem and he was so captivated by it. He asked his chief priest, whose name was Govardhan, who wrote this poem? This is spectacular, this is tremendous, who wrote it? I must meet this person. When Govardhan heard the poem, he said, these realizations, there's only one person possible, and that is Jayadev Goswami. Where does he live? He told him where he lives. But he told him that Jayadev Goswami does not associate with any materialistic people. He's very, very careful to only associate with devotees of the Lord. So the king, who was actually a very great devotee, he took off all of his royal dress, and he put on the robes of a mendicant, a Vaishnav mendicant, And he went to the house of Jayadev during the evening. And he went and he offered, very humbly offered his obeisances to Jayadev Goswami. And Jayadev looked at him and said, "Who are you? What are you doing? Why you're in this disguise? I can see that you are not a Vaishnav mendicant, that you look like some sort of a king. Why are you coming here to fool me? Who are you?" So Lakshman Sen understood, you cannot lie to a holy man. It's an offense. When a holy man asks you a question, you have to be very honest. Even if it's an embarrassing thing, you have to be honest. If you try, because the holy men are representatives of Krishna. If you try to cover your own duplicity by telling some lie, you may fool him, but Krishna in your heart knows that you have lied to my representative and you must atone for that. And he will give you atonement. So those people who are cultured and understand, they will never lie to a holy man. When they're asked... So Lakshman Sen said, "I'm the king of Bengal." "And I'm in disguise. But I'm coming to you as a beggar. I'm begging for your mercy. This is my real position. I'm begging you that you kindly come and live in my palace with me and be my guru." And Jayadev Goswami, he just looked at him and said, "No way, I will have nothing to do with you." He said, "Associating with materialistic people is worse than drinking poison willingly. Not only will I not have anything to do with you, not only will I not live in your palace, I will not even live in your kingdom. I will move to the other side of the Ganges." Haribo. You see, sadhus do not, they're not supposed to just say anything or do anything to flatter wealthy or powerful people for their own conveniences. They speak what's on their mind. So this is the kind of sadhu that Jayadev was. So when the current king heard these very severely critical remarks, he became even more humble. And he said, "Please, if I have inconvenienced you, I'm so terribly sorry. Just be kind upon me. Be merciful upon me." He said, "You have already spoken that you will go on the other side of the Ganges. Let me build a nice house for you on the other side of the Ganges, and you'll be happy there. And let me serve you and worship you there." So Jayadev looked at him and he said, "I spoke harshly just to test you. I didn't mean it. I just wanted to test to see how detached you were, whether you could remain humble even when you were being criticized." He says, "But you have passed the test. I can understand that although you are king and you have tremendous power and opulence, you are not attached to any of it. You are only attached to serving the great Vaishnavas and serving the Lord. Therefore, yes, I will live in the cottage that you build for me. And you can come to me anytime you like and take instruction and inspiration." In this way, Jayadev Goswami became the chief court pundit for the whole king of Bengal while he was living in Navadvip. And there's a beautiful story that is told how one day Jayadev, while he was writing the Gita Govinda, the place of Navadvip that he was writing was a place called Champahati. It's also very close to the place that later Gadadhar Pandit was born.
So he was writing, and his writing was based on the inspirations of his pure devotion from within his heart. He was not speculating. He was not imagining with his mind like so many writers today. But Krishna was writing through him. Even Srila Prabhupada would explain that I have not written any books. So it is Krishna writing these books. He's just using me as an instrument to give his words to the world. And sometimes Srila Prabhupada would ask his devotees to read his books to him. And he would sit there and just ecstatically listen. Now someone may think, how can you listen to your own books so ecstatically? Isn't this something kind of proud? But Srila Prabhupada understood, he was in full, total realization that he didn't write a word of it. It was also always Krishna writing through him. He was simply enjoying, like anything, hearing the words of Krishna, taking no credit for himself. So in this way, Krishna was revealing so many inspirational visions of the spiritual world of Vrindavan. And as Jayadeva was seeing it, he was writing it. And in this narration, it explains that Sri Radharani became very angry with Krishna, Man Leela. And Krishna tried to do everything that he could to make her pacified, so that she would associate with him once again. But nothing worked. So then Krishna, who is the Supreme Lord of the universe, the attractor of even Cupid, he begged Sri Radharani if he could place his head on her lotus feet. And when Jayadev had that inspiration and was about to write it, his limbs just began to tremble. And his mind just exploded that, how can I write such a thing? Who will understand? Krishna is the absolute truth. Krishna is the personality of Godhead. Krishna is worshipped by everyone. All the great gods, all the great sages, everyone worships Krishna. How could Krishna? Even Radharani worships Krishna. How could he place his head on her feet? I can't write it. This cannot be put in writing. And in a bewildered state, he decided, I should just go bathe in the Ganges. So he told his wife, Padmavati, I'm going to take my Ganga Snan, and you should have prasad prepared for me when I return. So he went to the Ganges. But at that time, Krishna disguised himself as Jayadev, Haribo. For Krishna, what is the difficulty? If he can become a boar big enough to hold the earth, he could certainly become Jayadev. So his form was Jayadev? Exactly, so much perfectly Jayadev, he was more Jayadev than Jayadev. And if anybody could detect a difference, it was Padmavati, his wife, who lived with him in the same little thatched hut for so many years. So he came and you have come back from your bath very soon? He said, yes. So she served him prasad, and he ate prasad. And then after prasad, he went to his palm leaves where he was writing his book, Gita Govinda. And he said, Padmavati, give me my pen. He took his pen, and exactly the words that came to Jayadev's mind that he was going to write, but he couldn't write, Krishna wrote it exactly. The amazing thing is he wrote it in handwriting that was identical to Jayadev's. Again,
Krishna wants, he could make Jayadev's, he could make his handwriting more Jayadev's than Jayadev's. How is that possible? Krishna can do anything. He is Bhagavan, possessing all opulences. And then he just left the house. And a few minutes later, the other Jayadev, he came in, still wet from the Ganges. And he said to Padmavati, "So prasad is ready?" She said, "You already ate prasad." I said, "Well, I did." He said, "Yes. You took another bath already?" He said, "Another bath? What is this, another bath?" So he didn't understand what's happening. So he just decided, "I'm just going to continue my writing." So he picked up his palm leaves, and there he saw, in his own handwriting, the verse that he was too ashamed to write. The verse that explains how Krishna, the charmer of millions of cupids, subordinate to the love of his supreme devotee Radharani, placed his head on her lotus feet, which exhibits how Krishna, although he is all-powerful, his greatest pleasure is to accept a position of being subordinate to the love of the bhakta. Guru Maharaj used to say that some people want to become God, but a bhakta becomes greater than God. God becomes the servant of his bhakta. Krishna trembled in fear of Yashoda. Krishna drove the chariot for Arjuna. Krishna was the supplier of sari material for Draupadi. And Krishna washed the lotus feet of Sudama and drank the water. Krishna held the shoes of Nanda on his head. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he would wring the clothes of his devotees on the bank of the Jamuna, and when they were carrying something heavy, he would pick it up and carry it himself to their house as a service. And Krishna places his head on the feet of Sri Radhika. This is bhakti. So when he saw that Krishna had written the very, very exact Sanskrit verse that was in his heart, he understood that that was Krishna who disguised himself as me. And he began to weep profusely, tears of love. And he went to his wife, Padmavati, and he said that you are so unlimitedly fortunate that you directly had the personal darshan of Krishna. And not only that, you were allowed to feed Krishna personally prasad with your own hands, and he accepted it. How fortunate you are. And he showed her the verse, and they both began to cry in ecstatic love. And then the most wonderful part of the story takes place. Right before his eyes and his wife, Padmavati, the beautiful form of Lord Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu appeared in his beautiful, beautiful golden complexion, shining like millions of suns of molten gold, and his beautiful, beautiful hair cascading down his shoulders and his arms reaching down below his knees with beautiful garland and dhoti like lightning, lotus-like eyes. Every part of his body was the most meticulously, perfectly, spiritually structured form just to attract all your heart, all your mind, and all your soul to his loving service. And when Jayadeva and Padmavati saw the beautiful form of Lord Gaurasundar, they were just infatuated with gratitude for that mercy they received. And they surrendered their lives at the lotus feet of Lord Gauranga, knowing that he was Krishna himself in this most magnificent form. And after they worshipped him, Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu explained that in the future, I will appear in this form that you're seeing now in this very place of Navadvip Dham. I will appear for the purpose of spreading the Yuga Dharma, the congregational chanting of the holy names of Sri Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. I will jubilantly dance through these streets of Navadvip, crying out the holy name. For 24 years I will reside here, and after that I will cut my hair and I will take sannyas order of life and I will live the remaining part of my life in Jagannath Puri. And while I'm in Jagannath Puri, Jayadev, this very poem that you are writing, Gita Govinda, he said, I will be in great ecstatic love, personally, hearing this poem being recited to me every day and every night. So Jayadeva Goswami was very happy. With this inspiration, he continued to write the Gita Govinda as a matter of service and pleasure to Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, knowing that he will be personally listening. And Lord Chaitanya told Jayadev, you should leave this place and go to Jagannath Puri. Jayadev asked, how could I leave your abode of Navadvip? Lord Chaitanya said, it is the service you must render. You go there and you worship Lord Jagannath. So very soon Jayadev and Padmavati moved to Jagannath Puri. And there they resided. And Lord Chaitanya told him that after you leave this world, you will eternally live in the eternal land of Navadvip Dham in my association, chanting the holy names. So these wonderful literatures we must approach with dignity. Srila Prabhupada explains, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati explained, and Jayadev Goswami himself explains that this Gita Govinda is for rasika bhaktas who are liberated from the modes of material nature. To read them prematurely will not help our spiritual lives, but will only confuse our spiritual lives. Therefore, under the guidance of a proper spiritual master, we must approach the proper Vaishnava literatures. But for the rest of us, these great literatures give us something. Just to hear some little excerpt from it gives us the understanding of what we're going to receive, of what we're giving our life for. of the magnitude of the treasure house of what Gaudiya Vaishnavism is all about. But then we must proceed step by step according to our particular realization under the guidance of Guru and the great Vaishnavas. If we accept this principle of humble submission in the service of Guru and Vaishnavas, then gradually all these realizations awaken within our heart. Not according to our time planning, but according to Krishna's will. And that is possible. To enter into this realm of transcendental realization, if we follow this principle of Srimad Bhagavatam, whoever carefully recites the mysterious appearances of the Lord with devotion in the morning and in the evening gets relief from all miseries of material life. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.